Welcome to Season 3 of Inflammation Nation. My name is Tara Regan. Inflammation Nation is a podcast from Arthritis Ireland aimed at increasing awareness and understanding of arthritis and related conditions. Welcome to this episode of Inflammation Nation. Today I'm joined by Una Martin and Dr. Kate McCann, and we're going to talk about lifestyle medicine and arthritis. Kate is an Irish Medical Council registered doctor with more than 15 years clinical experience and is a certified lifestyle medicine physician and creator of the social media project MDoc Health. Una is an advanced nurse practitioner who holds a diploma in positive health from the RCSI and is currently undertaking her lifestyle medicine accreditation with the British Society for Lifestyle Medicine. Una has been involved in the development of a booklet written by a specialist team of healthcare professionals that will be published shortly, Living Your Best Life, A Simple Guide to Living with Arthritis. You're both very welcome to the series and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Kate, if I could start with you first. Medication is just one component of managing your condition, but there are many aspects to our lifestyle that can have a positive impact on arthritis outcomes. Could you explain to us what lifestyle medicine is?
Thanks so much. I think this is a really important place to start. The term lifestyle medicine is widely used and also widely misused. And it can be really confusing for patients because there's absolutely no regulation or restriction on the use of this term. In the case of lifestyle medicine arthritis, what Una and I are talking about today, we're referring to a well-defined medical specialty that uses therapeutic lifestyle interventions to treat chronic conditions. Lifestyle medicine certified physicians and allied health professionals use evidence-based, whole-person prescriptive lifestyle changes. When we're talking about lifestyle medicine, and I do want to be really clear here, that we're not talking about complementary medicine, we're not talking about alternative medicine, we are talking about currently accepted, evidence-based, best practice guidelines for management of disease.
Great. Thank you, Kate. So essentially, it's about being active in your own disease management rather than being passive, and it's not about complementary therapies. So it's about turning behaviors into healthy habits, would that be?
It's about what needs to be done. There's a limit to what we can achieve with medications and therapies. And there is a point at which we do need to have healthy habits to look after our own health, all of us.
Okay. I mean, it sounds somewhat complex, but it's broken down into six pillars.
Yes.
So they're essentially the six components of our day-to-day lives that can have a positive impact on our health.
Yes.
Okay. Could you give me an overview of the six pillars and why they're so important in the management of arthritis?
So six pillars of lifestyle medicine is nutrition pattern, physical activity, restorative sleep, stress management, avoidance of risky substances, and positive social connections. Will I break that down just a little bit?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Okay. So let's start with physical activity. So I mean, I think it's really important to say, regardless of who we are, it is important that we stay physically active. It's essential for human health. So when it comes to patients with arthritis, when we're talking about staying active, what we don't want to happen is where patients avoid using affected joints and then we end up with more pain and stiffness. The lack of movement can lead to things like loss of range of motion or loss of muscle or loss of bone mass. And we talk about nutrition. I think it's really important for patients with arthritis to be aware that there's so much what I call nutribabble out there. Lots of nutrition misinformation. And arthritis patients are often targeted with supplements or elimination diets. And so working with evidence-based registered dietitians in eating a good healthy diet is really important. Sleep. We have a problem where patients don't get restorative sleep, and it goes both ways. So if you're not getting good sleep, you're not going to feel good. The fatigue is going to be worse. Pain may be worse. The flex is that patients who are in pain or stressed out about their diagnosis are going to have more difficulty getting sleep. Stress management is really important. When we're more stressed, we're going to feel worse than ourselves. It can contribute to poor sleep. It can contribute to fatigue. And also can be a trigger for some people for flares or worsening joint pain. We talk about avoiding risking substances. These are the ones like smoking, vaping, and alcohol. And a social connection. We know, and we talk about chronic disease, and in particular arthritis, having a strong social support system can really improve mental and physical well-being.
Okay. Thank you very much, Kate. And Una, I'm sure you encounter lots of people regularly in the rheumatology clinic who live with arthritis, obviously. And for somebody who you encounter there and who's never heard of lifestyle medicine before, and now they want to incorporate this into their life, How would they start at this, or how would they embark on this journey with lifestyle medicine to improve their outcomes?
So getting started is often the trickiest part. It's important for patients to think about their future, not just in the short term, but in the long term. And this can sometimes be a bit difficult, particularly when patients get a new diagnosis of arthritis. When we think about our health, it's important not just to think about the arthritis as the focus, but your life and your health in general for the future. The other important thing is try not to make too many changes at any one time. Pick maybe two or three that are the most important to you, but also that you feel that you have the confidence and the ability to change. It's important for you to think about what's important to you and how and when you want to get there. And it really helps some people if they write things down, as it helps them give a focus and it keeps them on track. The other most important thing is to maybe think about the important people that are in your life. Tell them about the changes that you may be wanting to make. Include people like your family, your friends and your work colleagues, because you will need their support and encouragement in not only getting started, but supporting you on the way. The other support is to look to your rheumatology team. They will be able to guide you and signpost you to additional support and resources that you can assist you on the journey, with a particular focus maybe on specific issues with your arthritis. The more support you have around you on the journey, the better you are, as there will be times when you will not be motivated, or you'll feel like you've gone off track, or there are barriers to making these changes and it's hard to kind of maintain them. So looking back to your family and friends' support to get you back on track is important.
OK, thank you, Una. I mean, I think what I'm hearing a lot about there is about the support of family and friends and people around you, and, you know, making sure that you have positive people in your life who are going to support you when you make these changes. And in one of the pillars, I was reading through the booklet, and there's under the relationships and connections section, there's a reference to radiators and drains. And I thought it was a fantastic analogy. Maybe you could explain it to us in a little bit more detail.
So this is a great section written by Dr. Patsy McSharry, and you'll see it in our booklet when it comes available. It's really important to recognise the significance of positive relationships in our life and how they can affect our health. However, unfortunately, we all have relationships in our life that take more energy out of us, and these are what we refer to as drains. And in contrast to other relationships that we tend to seem to, where we get more energy from, and we call these more radiators. And we tend to be in better form when we spend time with the radiators in contrast to the drains. But there's no getting away from it, unfortunately. Think about it. We all have relationships in our life where we can feel a drain of our energy with some and others that give us lots of energy. However, there are situations where we can't disconnect from these drainers, family members or work colleagues. But what's really important is to bring your awareness to the impact of these types of relationships in your life. Think about limiting the time that you have to spend in their company, if that's possible, not always, and balance this with spending more time with those we describe as radiators before or after encounters, those with those who feel us make us drained. The other important thing about relationship is to establish some boundaries around relationships. And when you notice a drain on your energy, fatigue is something that most patients who live with arthritis talk to us about. And it's really important to reserve your good energy for what's important to you and to maintain the well-being in your relationships, and rather than using up good energy on things that have more impact and matter more to you.
OK, so decide what's important to you and be strong in your, you know,
exactly.
Be confident in the fact that you want to surround yourself with positive people as well.
That's it.
Yeah, okay.
That's it.
I think, you know, it's obviously the people who radiate energy and enthusiasm, they're the ones we want to be around, but we can't avoid the drains all of the time. Just, yeah, keep as much of your connections to the positive people as possible.
That's it.
Yeah. And Kate, I think one of the things that strikes me as really important with this is having the confidence in yourself to go forward with lifestyle medicine, you know, having the confidence in yourself to engage in it and to surround yourself with positive people, but also to incorporate these changes into your life. We know that exercise and physical activity is one of those difficult components for people. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's probably having the confidence to start because they may not have engaged in physical activity or exercise for a long time. What advice would you give to somebody who might be nervous about, you know, engaging in physical activity or exercise?
Well, I think in this case, let's put it in the context of a patient with arthritis. So much of the lack of confidence may come from pain, lack of joint stability, stiffness. They don't trust their body the way they did before. So when we're talking about a patient with arthritis, I have a lower threshold to tell a patient, talk to your doc. Get a really good idea if you do have recommended limitations, what they are, or maybe reassured that your limitations aren't what you think they are. I have a very low threshold as well for having patients do at least one session with a chartered physiotherapist to explore their range of motion, explore their stability, and get some really good guidance on what type of exercise is really going to help build their strength, keep up their muscle mass, build their bone mass, and look after their heart health. If patients just need to be reassured, sometimes what we need to do is just kind of explore those ideas together. What do they like to do? If a patient hates walking, then them telling me they're going on a walking program isn't going to work. And you'd be shocked at how often that happens. They just tell me, I'm going to start walking. And they say just to get out of the chair. And I'm like, well, do you like it? Because it's not going to work. Yeah. So finding something they enjoy, finding something that does work with their type or pattern of disease and limitations. And limitations aren't just joints. It can be financial. They can't afford to join the gym. It can be geographical. They live out in the country and there's nowhere to walk, especially out in the winter. And so sometimes just having somebody, whether that's an allied health professional or a doctor, just explore those options with them, help them make a plan, start small with something they're comfortable with.
Yeah. And something that they'll enjoy as well.
They'll enjoy what you're doing. Yeah. No one's going to do something they hate. It's just going to add to their stress.
Yeah. I always feel as well, if you're with people, when you're doing exercise, people that you enjoy spending time with, it makes it feel far less like an arduous task and more fun.
Absolutely.
You're more likely to keep it up probably as well. That's the hope. And that brings us then also to scenarios where people sometimes experience flares in their arthritis. And that's quite common. Would you suggest that people who are experiencing flares keep on moving, you know, listen to their body, but strike a balance between rest and activity, but still keep moving?
When we're talking about flares, in this case, we have to understand that we're talking about arthritis is really a spectrum of diseases. So in this case, I'm going to say it really has to be individualized. We have to really say you need to follow the medical advice you've been given by your team. If this is your first flare and you haven't experienced it before of your type of arthritis, you probably need to get in contact with your team. So if we have to give general advice here, the old advice that whole body complete rest for a flare is recommended, that's out the window. So we do want patients to stay as active as they can comfortably. So yes, get out of that bed. If you can, look after yourself, continue to do so. But, you know, whether or not we should exercise to the flare, there are times where, depending on type of arthritis, the consultant rheumatologist or chart physiotherapy might recommend rest of a particular joint. And I've had patients with lower limb flares that have, for example, switched to chair yoga for a couple of weeks and kept that upper body and core active. So it really should be individualized. But as a rule, nope, whole body, complete person, long-term rest for 6 to 8 weeks, definitely not recommended anymore.
That's good to know. And Una, on that note about rest and pain, we know that sleep and rest play a really important role in managing pain, especially for people who live with arthritis. So could you talk to me a little bit about the importance of sleep and how vital that is then to our overall health and well-being?
So sleep is important for us all, but particularly if you're living with arthritis. And often in the first few months when people get arthritis, they spend time at night thinking about what their future is going to hold. And that can start to have an impact on their health. But when we don't get enough sleep, it actually increases our sensitivity to pain. And this can increase joint pain and stiffness. So it's vital to have adequate sleep. When we are sleeping, it gives our bodies the opportunity to repair and regenerate our tissues, including those affected by inflammation in the joints. And just like when we have pain, inadequate sleep, it can worsen arthritis symptoms. We all know that when we don't have a good night's sleep, how the impact it can have on our next day and how we go about our day. So it's really important to get good sleep to help maintain our energy levels during the day. And when we sleep well, our day goes so much easier. We're able to engage in all our activities, both mentally and physically, And this helps with managing our arthritis, because obviously if we sleep better, we're able to move better. If we're able to move better, we're able to do our exercises. So we all know that living with arthritis can be challenging, and sometimes this can also affect our emotional health. And particularly, this can be very tricky in the first few months of diagnosis until we learn to master living with arthritis and get some new skills in coping with arthritis. So that's why it's really important for you to prioritise your sleep and to regulate it, because it helps our mood and reduces the risk of stress and other mental health issues in the long term.
That's really important, I think, as well, you know, that we hear so much about the importance of sleep. Mm-hmm. And I think you just can't underestimate the importance of a good night's sleep. It Absolutely. Really is. Yeah, it's critical, really. And Kate, on the subject of our overall health, we know that smoking is very bad for our health. But if you live with arthritis, is alcohol going to contribute negatively to your condition, even if you adhere to the recommended limits? Something.
See, yeah. See, this depends. Mm-hmm. So first of all, let's just say that, yeah, smoking and vaping are bad for our health. Mm-hmm. Full stop. Just put that out there.
Yeah.
And if you have a chronic disease, you're still smoking or vaping, then, you know, pop into your doc, get some help with smoking or vaping cessation.
Yeah.
And yeah, I heard the myth out there, which I hear so many from my patients, and I learned so much from my patients, that they were told that alcohol could actually improve their arthritis.
Okay.
But that obviously we know full, just let's myth bust that one. Obviously, it's not going to. Mm-hmm. And the best advice for humans that do consume alcohol, and I do mean humans, so across the board, is that if we're going to consume alcohol, that we do that within low-risk drinking limits. And the reality is that fewer than 5% of Irish people actually know what low-risk drinking limits are. So I always tell my patients, I actually will do it with them. Drinkaware.ie has a great calculator based on your drinking preferences. What do you drink? Do you drink a lager? Do you drink a pint? Do you have a whiskey? Do you want some Prosecco? Based on what you drink, mm-hmm. based on your sex at birth, that's what you can handle, and it'll help you calculate that out. So in general, sticking to low risk drinking limits, definitely. And that's going to be fewer than 17 standard drinks for men and fewer than 11 standard drinks for women. And it does sound sexist, but that's simply what our livers can handle as per biology. And those units are really difficult to understand. This is why I tell patients, use an actual calculator. Mm-hmm. That said, there are patients that's not a good idea for. For example, patients who are on certain medications for arthritis cannot take alcohol. And if you have any questions about that, talk to your doc or talk to your registered pharmacist. They're a great source of information. So there are patients who can't consume alcohol. And there are patients with certain types of arthritis for whom their alcohol can actually be a trigger. And they might learn that avoiding alcohol is their best way to avoid a flare.
If I'm somebody who visits you in the rheumatology clinic and I get a diagnosis of arthritis and you talk to me about lifestyle medicine, it's something that I might not have heard of before. How would you describe that to me?
I think what's really important, Tara, is to say to the patient that, okay, coming to terms with a new diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis is difficult. But essentially, if you're Mary without rheumatoid arthritis 6 months ago and you're Mary with rheumatoid arthritis sitting in front of us today, you're still the same person. The treatment of inflammatory arthritis in particular has changed significantly in the last 2 decades and has made patients' lives so much more, not word easy, but much more comfortable. And people can go about life as normal now with a lot of the treatments that we have. However, not all the answers are in your medicines. What's really important is for you to look beyond the medicines and look at yourself and look at the changes that you can make that can make a big difference. And just look across the 6 pillars, pick one or two that really think you can change and matter to you. And if you can make one or two changes, it'll make a big difference to the overall management of your arthritis in the long term. But they have to be meaningful for you so that the change can be sustained and that you get the value from it and it can impact your arthritis in the long term.
Great. Kate, we hear a lot about inflammatory arthritis. In terms of osteoarthritis, are there any aspects of lifestyle medicine that are particularly beneficial to that condition?
When we talk about lifestyle medicine and osteoarthritis, a lot of it tends to circle around what we do to maintain a healthy weight. This is really important for patients, especially with hip or knee osteoarthritis. We know that for every excess 1 kilogram of body weight, that translates to 4 kilograms of pressure through the hip or knee. Mm-hmm. So we know that if patients are slightly above a healthy weight, that if we can help them maintain or get down to a healthier weight, that's going to take a lot of pressure off the hips and knees. And when we talk about osteoarthritis in general, patients tend to become less active, and it's really important that we maintain that healthy weight. That comes from staying active, eating a healthy diet. And the other aspect that becomes important is that patients who have their disease has progressed to the point where they are looking ahead to possible surgical interventions. And at that point, lifestyle medicine has a really important role in what we call prehab. That is getting a patient ready for an expected surgery. And we do everything we can so a patient has that surgery with as fewest complications. So that means that their heart, their lungs are in a really good position, that they're active, they're more likely to go through that surgery and be out of that bed post-surgery and back home with as fewest complications, such as pneumonia or infection.
Thank you very much for clarifying that. It's something that I think causes quite a lot of confusion, and there's a lot of myths out there. Una, then going forward, you know, obviously somebody might have reached their goals, they might have set themselves certain targets, but they could also feel that they've plateaued, or, you know, they're looking for other ways to improve their overall health. What advice would you give to those people? Is it about doing it for themselves, not for other people?
Yeah, probably suggest a number of things to maybe go back to their original plan and their goals, and particularly in the first few months where you're getting used to working with a team of health professionals. You know, you may have set your goals around something that you wanted to please or make it look good for somebody else, like your physiotherapist. And maybe she suggested this exercise, but really it's not for you. And you've got tired of your goal, and it wasn't really what was rooted in what you wanted to do. So when you make a goal or want to make a change, it's something that has to be important to you and not someone else. We've mentioned the 6 pillars, which can all help us to improve our health for the future. But sometimes we might think we're doing okay. We might, you know, we all might get a little bit complacent here and there. But there's always a little bit of room for improvement, and always maybe a little room to stretch ourselves a little bit more. The other thing is to maybe talk to your rheumatology team about your goals, and they will be in a position to maybe support you and help you improve and build on your goals that you may have not thought about. And I think it's important to maybe look at other ways to improve your health. Sometimes people don't look at the 6 pillars, say, for example, stress, and they don't necessarily associate the stress with their health directly. And you may have thought about maybe improving your sleep, and that may have helped your stress, but you might be able to think about taking up a new hobby or a new outlook, something like yoga. And then if you take up something like yoga, there is a whole raft of benefits that that can bring you, because it will touch on all the other 6 pillars that we talked about, such as connection, sleep, movement and stress. So I guess it's about looking at maybe until you get your kind of head around it and start to think about, because lots of us may never have set goals, is to maybe think about short term ones to begin with and then maybe build on your longer term ones for the future.
OK, yeah, that's great advice. I like the way if you incorporate one of the changes, such as, you know, the exercise, that might maybe have a knock on effect onto your social connections and your relationships and your stress management. So it's all like a circle, you know.
Absolutely. Like, they're all interconnected, and then you can get so much benefit from one that leads into the other.
Great. Okay. And then, Kate, finally, it appears to me that lifestyle medicine is about being in the driving seat of your own condition. It's about being empowered. It's about taking back control. It must be very liberating for people to realise that they can actually be proactive in their disease management rather than reactive.
It is. And I think I'm a very big advocate that patients should be empowered. But I think one of the things I do want to talk about is the difference between empowering patients, giving patients as much control over their disease management choices as they can, and what that actually means. So patients are empowered when they have access to correct evidence-based information, timely access to all the expert supports when they need it, and that they can take part in shared decision-making about making those decisions about their care and forming those goals. However, there can be a very fine line between empowering patients and then sometimes blaming patients. And I want to draw that distinction because if patients are struggling with prescribed lifestyle changes, it's not working for them. or things aren't working out. And let's be honest, in some types of arthritis, these are progressive diseases. So as a patient, you're doing everything right, but it's not working. We don't want to come back and say that that's your fault. You should be able to self-manage your condition. So when we talk about empowering, we're giving you all the tools to do what you can do. And if it's not working, you know, your medical team is still there. It means that both the patient and the healthcare professionals need to look to their plan together if your self-management isn't working. And likewise, there's also a fine line between patient empowerment and then, you know, the exploitation there. So the aspect or the marketing of patient empowerment is often used to market patients misinformation, misleading treatments or alternative treatments. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about empowering patients, we are talking that it's we should never mislead a patient or in any way just to profit from them or promote unproven treatments. That's not empowering patients either. So it's really making sure patients have access to correct information and all the support that they need.
Yeah. So access to accurate scientific based information is really important. Okay. And just to say as well that the booklet, the new booklet, Living Your Best Life, A Simple Guide to Living with Arthritis, will be available on the Arthritis Ireland website. Thank you both very much for taking the time to be with us today, Kate and Una. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
That's all from this episode of Inflammation Nation. But don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or as they always say, wherever you get your podcasts. For further information about arthritis, you can visit our website, arthritisireland.ie, or contact our helpline on 0818 252 846. See you next time. Inflammation Nation is supported by Pfizer.